Mauri ora e te whanau, welcome back to a new podcast episode. Today we have a very exciting interview. Today I'm interviewing Sabby J. She is a content creator. She's doing awesome stuff. Take a look at her social media pages. She runs a series called Bougie on a Budget, which is initially how I found her, where she like goes out to like cafes or something that are affordable, and she'll document the journey so that other people can have fun on a budget as well. But yeah, let's get into today's podcast episode. Hope you guys enjoy it, and as always, please, if you can, it would be awesome if you could share this podcast episode on your story and tag me. This helps the podcast get sent out to a lot of different people and grows our community. But thank you, that's it for today. Enjoy the episode. Kia ora te whanau, welcome back to a new Māori Millionaire podcast episode. Today I'm very excited to have my new friend, my new colleague on, Sabby. She is going to be talking a lot about her journey and what she's been focusing on of late. Sabby is a content creator, she's an influencer, and she creates a lot of content about living an affordable lifestyle. She's got over 67,000 followers across her platforms. She's worked with some really cool brands like Bumble, Dermalogica, Tui, Huawei, Colgate, literally the list goes on. She is most well known though for her Bougie on a Budget series, which that's how I first found her, and she basically goes into places and shares how you can go on do fun things for a cheaper price. So that kind of encompasses all of her passion for things like her background in finance, her love for self-care and nice things. And outside of that, Sabby also owns her own business where she is a consultant agency for branding, marketing and content creation. She's done this since 2018, and I am so excited to introduce her to you all. Welcome to the funny, welcome to the house, and no mai haere mai.
Yeah, kia ora, thank you so much for having me. I am a big fan of you too, and I'm so glad we've connected. I mean, I feel like you're like turned into like a guru in the finance space, and I'm so pleased that you're having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be on the podcast. I know it's the new year, and I think most people are probably still having their fun holiday, but we're out here hustling because why are we doing this? You tell me. I don't know.
This is a relaxing holiday. This feels like a holiday, really. Like, this is fun.
I know. That's what I tell my mom. She's like, why are you working again? I'm like, it's fun though. Like, I don't see it as work. Like, I'm just like having chats with people, recording podcast episodes, working on my business. Like, this is like fun to me. It's like going on holiday. So yeah, but thank you anyways for your time to be here. Tell me more about where you come from and what got you to the position you're in today.
Yeah, I think that's something I really do want to share with you, or like from a different perspective instead of just listing out my accomplishments, because what I really love about your channel is that you go into, the class disparity, the income disparity. And I think what, people might look at me now and think, oh, she's this and this and doing well. But I really just came, I'm Sri Lankan, my parents came here during the Civil War, Tamil genocide in Sri Lanka. They came here as refugees. So they had very little education. They did have a job. They did get good jobs in banks. And then, I was the first person to go to uni in my family, so I have a degree in finance. And I think for me, it was really, I had to really break out of what my parents wanted, what I thought society wanted for me, which is, starting, instead of finishing my degree and going into a full-time job, I decided, while I was at uni, I was working in marketing, and I really loved it. I loved it 10 times more than my degree, and I started working full-time on top of doing my degree because I loved marketing so much, and I transitioned into having a business. But I do feel that, having an education was quite important for first generation. I would be first generation New Zealand, but like from my parents being immigrants to this country with, not too much education. And then I think another big thing for me was freedom, freedom to do whatever I liked. Like, I've done content creating before that. I've done acting, modeling. I've done, it's not really something I want to say, but like, I've been on reality TV, even though that's not really something to flex at all. But, I've managed to try and do everything and live quite comfortably while doing the things I enjoy. And I think, to get there was really changing that mindset from being from like, say, lower middle class, or letting go of the views that the people around me and my parents and family had of how you should be and how you should be a part of the economy. And I think, you know, for everyone, when you finish uni, it's kind of you get a job and then you work full time, buy a house, you have a family, you have investments. And I think for me, I completely broke out of that. And I was like, I did my degree. I went and studied acting. I started my business. I was poor many times, like quite broke, where I didn't even, you know, I was telling my dad the other day, I had like $30 for my budget for groceries. So I was just eating bread and peanut butter and milk. But it's not even bad. I'm quite happy. It's still good food. Still something. So when I had to start, when I started my business, there was, yeah, quite difficult times. So, yeah, I think where I've come to now from where I came from just West Auckland, Henderson. And, you know, I went to AUT and then I went on a completely different pathway than what I expected.
That is such an inspiring story. And I think it's quite relatable of being able to kind of rewire our brains and go, okay, this is what's happened, but this doesn't mean this is how I have to live my life forever. And I'm constantly in that kind of battle of going, this is what happens in our community. This is what most people do. I want to have different results. Therefore, I have to have different actions. And I think that's like so tough as someone who's in that journey myself of going against the status quo. What was that like for you in being the first person in your family to go to uni? And for me, I think my mum was the first person in our family to go to uni. And I think since then, like most of my cousins don't go to uni. So whenever I would talk about uni kind of problems, they wouldn't understand because they've never been to uni. They've been working since they were 14, 15 full-time jobs. It was really difficult for me to find people who, you know, understood it, who were in my family. And yeah, it was quite tough, I guess. So how did you move through that?
I think mine was the complete opposite. Like when I went to school, I think I was, you know, you're just inclined and told by everyone that you should go and study whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Apprenticeship or go to uni. All my cousins, so my mom's sisters that are all here, that all, you know, immigrated here or came here after the war, all my cousins have degrees, and they were fancy degrees like engineering, lawyers, banking, whatever. And they all went to AU. I went to AUT because of the flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I had that pressure of, you know, performing very well in my degree and getting like a high performing job. So when I was at uni and I chose not to work in a bank part time, I chose to work like a fun marketing job. I think, you know, that was like the first thing. And then the second thing was, while I was at uni, I started modeling. That was the second thing. Then as soon as twice during my degree, I took a pause and I went to India to pursue acting. And everyone was against it, like my parents, my fellow friends, my, you know, fellow peers at uni. Like everyone was kind of questioning, like, you know what, the can I swear, or was that not all good?
Don't worry, I swear on my podcast, other people swear on it. It's
kind of, oh, what the fuck is she doing, you know, like what is she doing with her life when she's, you know, good at uni? And I was good at uni as well. Like I made like the dean's list. I was part of like a group of students that helped write the study curriculum, like, so how to study for like the general business department. And so like I was good at it, but it was all right. But, you know, I knew there was other things I liked as well. But I assumed when I finished uni, I would go into a full-time finance job, and I chose not to. And I decided to keep working full-time for the marketing company that I was working with during uni. And I think, you know, everyone in my family is kind of like, you know, when is she going to go to the bank? When is she going to go to one of the big five, you know, whatever those, what are those companies called? I don't even know the names anymore. Those big companies. Yeah, that's where everyone assumed I should be or would be. And everyone at uni assumed I would be there too. So it was kind of like, I kept working in finance, in marketing, and everyone assumed I'd go on to get a job in that. And then I decided to start a business. And so the business was also in marketing, not in finance. I think it's taken my parents a long time to kind of accept that while I was educated in one area, it's not what I wanted to do with my life forever. So it was kind of breaking that stigma of, if you have an education in a certain field, you need to stick to that field, because of the investment you put into your education, which is like $40,000, right? And I obviously took a student loan. So it's almost like a waste of money right there, right at the beginning, a choice that you made at 18, 19, right? And then the second big part was like moving into a field that's not considered very, what would you call it? Like, you know, it's not a lawyer, it's not an engineer, it's not a doctor. In my culture, and, you know, in the South Asian and Asian culture, it's very much about having those high profile, high earning jobs. And I quickly realized I don't want that for myself. I don't want to work in a corporate company. I really did not like the lifestyle of it. And I wanted a flexible job. And then eventually I wanted the flexibility to be my own boss. So breaking out of all of that was, yeah, quite tricky.
I love that. It's very relatable. Given that you didn't move down that route of working in that kind of industry, from your finance degree, what was the biggest learning you...
I think from my finance degree, the biggest thing I really learned was like understanding like the economy, understanding capitalism, financial literacy, taxing, accounting, investing, and understanding money and how our lives are literally ruled and we are servants to money, and learning and understanding how you can utilize money and not serve money is the big lesson I really learned from my degree, which is not what you're meant to get. What you're meant to get is to go get a job in finance
so that you can continue to serve the economy and continue to help other people make more money.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you decided to take it a different route and make money for you. So what has that been like for you?
Making money on my own, you mean? Like,
going down a separate route and being able to run your own business and kind of have that freedom. You know, it's quite similar to what I've done. I was working in the legal industry. I was working at a law firm. I was, you know, following that kind of corporate model. And then I was like, yeah, this isn't even fun. I just want to like work for myself and get a cabin and work in my little cabin and make podcast videos, you know?
Honestly, working for myself is, I would recommend it for everybody. It does require sacrifices, but it's not as much sacrifices as people think. When you're for a company, you're sacrificing your time and freedom. When you're working for yourself, you get your freedom and time, but you do have to sacrifice two things. One is potentially money initially. And then the second one is assurance. You know, like a sure thing. You don't have that ever. And so at any point, you can file for bankruptcy at any point. You know, I'm also a content creator. I can get cancelled and no longer work for brands. And it's, you know, I've been very close calls for both. So it's just, you know, the best thing about working for myself is the freedom to do whatever I like, how I like, and choose my clients, choose the way I work with them, choose the values. And also choose how I make money. But the biggest part is, you know, what I really love about your podcast, not just about making the most amount of money you can, because what are you meant to do with that money? You know, I think for me, it's about making money work for you, earn enough to live comfortably. And then you spend the rest of your time doing things that you want, like you do your podcast. I make content. I get to spend time with my family anytime I want. I can take any day off. I can go to all these social events that I get invited to. And I don't have to worry about, you know, I can push my schedule and my client work around it. So if anything, it's like you're no longer working as part of a system. You're creating the system for yourself, and how you're creating your own bubble and system for yourself, where you choose your values and how you pay people and how you receive your money. And it's not like a set contract that someone else has written for you. And you also don't have to conform to that set contract. That's a big thing I learned, right? A big thing I've always learned, or even my parents tell me, people around me who work in professional jobs, is like, keep your personal and professional life separate. My entire professional life is also my private life. All my friends are clients. My clients became friends. I'm friends with all the brands I work with. I can tell them what I'm going through. You know, everyone, this is something I've talked on other podcasts, is I had two very difficult years. And if it was anyone else, they would have to just quit their job and stay at home. My clients were so flexible with me that they let me take as many days off as I want, do works on like a flexible project and timeline, and just do like small to medium projects. There was no pressure. And then if they needed something really intense, I referred them to other agencies. And of course, I did lose some clients that wanted something more full on. But, you know, you get to really create your world for like the way you work and how you make money for yourself.
I love that. And on that kind of same note, do you believe that money buys happiness?
I think money buys you freedom. And so you can pursue your passions, and you're less caged in, you're less dependent on others, you're less likely to do jobs or make sacrifices of your lifestyle for a job or even for your business. When you have money, you're able to really put yourself, think of what you want first for yourself. Of course, there are obligations, but when you have money, you can turn down clients that aren't right for you. You can turn down opportunities. You don't have to work so much that you're exhausted. But I don't think money buys happiness in the sense of buying material things for happiness. I think a lot of people associate money with material beings and owning a yacht and big fancy houses and nice things. For me, it's more about having freedom to do things that I love and knowing what I love and wanting to do those things and not thinking, oh, you know, I have to work, I have to make money today or every day because I've got to pay the bills. But to even get to that stage, you know, you really have to break out of a mindset of, say, like, I would say middle class family. So breaking out of that middle class mindset of that fear of not having security. But, you know, I'm also in a privileged position where I have an education, I don't have kids, I don't have a family, I don't have like, you know, my own family. I do have my parents that I support, but they still have their own job. So, you know, I'm still in a privileged position that a lot of people aren't. But I do think anyone can break out of lower to middle class and go into upper middle class quite easily with, you know, changing their mindset.
I think that it's a very controversial topic, and I've tried talking about this with people, and especially people that are close to me who are in that kind of same predicament of, you know, living paycheck to paycheck and struggling with money, worrying about money. And, you know, all of these books that I've read about money literally say exactly what you're saying, that, you know, becoming wealthy is actually in your mindset, and far before you actually become wealthy, your mindset shifts. And I guess at the moment I'm sitting in this kind of thing of developing my wealth mindset. And each time I try and, you know, encourage other people to do it, they're like, oh, but that doesn't make sense. And one of the best examples of that is in Robert Kiyosaki's books, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He always says, you know, millionaires or rich people never say, I can't afford that. Because when you say that, you're conditioning your mind to believe that I can't afford that, and you're kind of putting it into reality, and then you're making it you're putting it into existence. And I guess what people I know who don't have money, when I tell them this, they're like, so what do I do when I actually don't have money? And that's an interesting thing, because I've been in that same position where back when I was at uni and I was really broke, I had to start telling myself, I will find money. I will, you know, money will come to me to be able to pay my bills. And it's about like, you know, you don't have to lie or totally bullshit what you're saying and say like, oh, I can't afford everything, but you can kind of shift how you're doing it. So yeah, I really, really resonate with that. What is your best financial tip that you would give anyone listening into the podcast episode today? How can we grow a wealth mindset, or is your tip something different? What would you say?
I think for me to really break out of my mindset is understand what other mindsets are out there and not listening to the people around me. There's nothing wrong with the way they think, but it's not how where I want to be. And where, if you want to be, I don't know, cruising on a yacht in somewhere in the world and not worrying about money, that doesn't mean you're not working. It means that you've made money work for you. You've created the lifestyle you want. You should be going and listening to them, not to the people who don't have it, because they will never be able to break out of the mindset that they have and what they've created for themselves. So for me, anytime I want advice, obviously I don't go to my parents, right? I go to my parents for advice on other things, but not for any sort of money. If I want advice, you know, I'll Google it. I'll look at the top books, I'll look at the top podcasts and look at all the people I admire and how they got there. And if you see, a lot of them actually did, you know, we might say they're privileged for certain reasons, but they still came from very normal backgrounds. Not everyone, you know, of course, a lot of billionaires like Trump and stuff all came from money, but a lot of people have broken out, and you have to see how they break out. And so I think, you know, if you want something, you have to find a way to do it. If you don't have money, how can you make more money on top of your job? What else can you do? What are your side hustles? There is always things you can do with no education. If you've got a, you know, got a brain, you've got physical ability to lift and move things, anything is possible. The internet is free. You can YouTube everything. You don't need to pay for an education. Yeah, you know, I moved from, I did a few marketing things at uni, but most of my my background is self-taught. I did all the Facebook modules, which is free. I didn't pay for this certification till later, but I couldn't afford the certification when I started my business, but I didn't need it. I've done all the modules and completed them, and you can YouTube everything to learn. You know, there's so many PDFs online of books and free, you know, free advice. And then there's channels like yours, and Girls That Invest, The One Up, The Curve, all giving free advice that you might monetize in your courses of someone who can't, you know, sit and listen for hours. But if you've got time and you don't have money, and that's the thing, you have to realize you've got two, your money is your time and time is money. You have two things if you don't have money. If you've got time, you can make money. So, yeah, that's my tip.
I love that, learning how to like leverage what you have and what is available to you in that moment. And that's kind of exactly what I did when I was at uni. And, you know, I had literally no money, but I figured even though I was studying full time, I was like, okay, that's only 8 hours in a day. There's like, you know, depending on how much you want to sleep, there's like 16 potential hours to do things. And, you know, I could leverage those hours in a day to be able to create something for my future. And that's literally what I did. I had no money to start my business. Like, it would, you would laugh if you saw my first logo. It was absolutely ridiculous. I literally went on Canva, and I'm like not a what's it called, like a visual person. I don't know how to design things, like absolutely terrible. But I literally, it was like, you know, what's that like really normal, like the email font, like Roman Sans or whatever it's called,
Comic Sans or something. I don't know.
That one. It was literally like two M's put together and a red circle around it. It was the stupidest thing ever. People kept on telling me, they're like, it looks like a gag patch, and I was like, oh, it actually kind of does, doesn't it?
I mean, hey, you know, two in one, really.
And that's exactly it. Like, you're starting with whatever you have in that moment, and being able to look at what you have. And I guess that's part of the wealth mindset. Like, most people would be like, oh no, I've got no money, that means therefore I can't do X, Y, and Z. But it's like, instead of saying, instead of looking at what you can't or giving attention to what you don't have, like, look at what you do have. Yeah, so I love that. Tell me about your social media work and how you were able to become a content creator, because I know a lot of people, some people, not a lot of people, definitely look at content creators and go, cool, like they're making so much money, I want to do that, I don't know how they did it. So what is your experience with social media? What is your mission behind it? How did you get started with social media, and what's your experience with it so far?
I think this is something I really wanted to talk to you about, because I feel like not many influencers or content creators really gatekeep the industry, and it's very hard for people of color or people from lower class backgrounds to, they can get in terms of getting a following, but monetizing it is a completely different game. And monetizing it does require some sort of like literacy and hustle, and you know, it does take work. So when I started my social media, my whole platform was about like colorism, feminism. I swore a lot, you know, it was really combating misogyny, all sorts of, and racism, all sorts of things. And I didn't really have a filter. Like, I would say my channel was basically like a social, a commentary platform. And I, you know, I did, obviously I did model, and I did get like a bit of surgery, share a bit of makeup tips here and there. But I think my main audience was just interested in like my rants and stuff like that. So I got an audience quite quickly. It was a mix of New Zealand, Australia, US, and India. And I never thought it's something you can monetize, but I became friends, you know, from, I used to, when I worked in marketing, I used to go to events. And when I went to events, I saw these people like Chris Fox, you know, making money, going to these events, like getting paid to be at these events. And I was like, wow, they went from having, you know, just making silly videos like me to creating this empire. So obviously the first thing I did is talk to these people, like, how did you do it? What did you do? And there's no shame in asking. They might say no and not help you, but your best bet is someone who is like you, someone who looks like you, they will 100% tell you. The few times I did approach, like, say, more of like the snobby white influencers, which I'll just say up front, you know, of course they just ignored my messages, or just like, oh, you know, it just kind of happened. Which of course it did just happen for them. But for people like us, we can get a following, but getting into the event space, getting the money is a whole different thing. And so I think when I started my platform, it really was about like just a woman of color being herself and like you know, going despite any of the obstacles I might face, you know, or suppression culturally and also in the Western community, when you're going for opportunities that are traditionally not meant for you, right? Just talking about that stuff. And then it quickly turned into, actually, you know what, I do want to start working with brands. I do want to start working with events. And I'll tell you straight away, like, I was just not welcomed into the industry straight away, even though I have more of a following than many of the girls that just put up pretty pictures with, you know, and they have like 5K. I had like maybe 20K at the time just on Instagram. But I didn't even monetize. I had very high engagement. But, you know, these brands, you know, there was like a brand called, I think one of the first brands I reached out to was, I'd saw some of my friends had gotten like some tights from this brand called, and I reached out to them and I was like, oh, you know, I'd love if we could work together at some point. And at that point, I was very willing to trade that because I worked out a lot just to get a pair of free tights, right? And when we look at me now, like, I've worked with all these brands, I get paid so much money. A couple of years ago, it's like 2019, 2020, I couldn't even get a fucking free pair of tights that are worth like $10 cost price. And when I reached out to them, you know, the sort of combat that I got was like, oh, can we see your stats? So it's like an automatic assumption that because I'm a person of color, they assume that I don't have a high New Zealand audience or that I don't have an audience that they think they can cater to. It's an assumption, right? That they make. Now, I don't have that assumption anymore, but there was that at the time. And I, the other part was like how they treated me. So they were like, oh, we'll just send you whatever color. And I already had like, say like three red sets. And I was like, oh, you know, would I be able to get the green one, please? I don't really wear red. I've got a couple of red sets. I don't really wear red. And my theme on my feed at the moment is blah, 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 when we did themes, right? And she's like, oh, I'll just cancel the order, and then didn't talk to me. So it's almost like I have to be grateful that they wanted to send me anything in the first place, and I don't even deserve to choose the color of the clothing that I want, right? And then that was like a really, like, that put me off the industry so badly. And I think one of my friends invited me to like a Huawei event, and then they saw my page and they're like, can we give you a free phone? They did ask for six photos, but the phones were like 1,500, so six in-feed posts. I was like, yeah, I'll do like some cool photo shoots. I actually spent money making good photos for them for the phone. And it was, I shot the photos on my phone, did like theme shoots. I spent like 6-7 days doing it, but that's how much you would work for a phone anyway, right? And at that time I had like a really shitty phone as well. It was just like an old Android phone, not a great camera. So it was a huge upgrade for me. So when they gave me that opportunity, like, I showed them how good my work was, and I worked with them up till pretty much 2022, until they withdrew a lot of their products from the market. So I ended up working with them for 5 years and moved from, you know, just getting a phone to every single product on their roster and also getting paid as well. But, you know, when I started off, it was like one or two people, and that Huawei is an Asian company, gave me an opportunity, and that helped me. And then I was able to reach out to me and be like, oh, this is the work I've done for Huawei. No one approached me. No one wanted me, right? When I did the Huawei brand, the amazing thing was that it was run by a company called PPR, and they also hold Maybelline. And then they asked me to come and model for the Maybelline extended range. And they already had my media kit and, you know, my stats. And so these opportunities all came from other people of color. It all came from, like, you know, yes, that one experience put me off, but, you know, after that, I was like, you know, I want to be in this industry. I'm just going to have to knock on as many doors as possible, and eventually some will open. But at that stage, it wasn't like, you know, I can get paid. I was getting some free stuff. And, you know, it went from getting free stuff to someone really liking some of my racism and social content to another person of color, Sarah. She's actually one of my closest friends now. She signed me to an agency that she was working for at the time. They brought me in opportunities. And then I also had to change my mindset as well, even as a content creator, that I'm worth more than just free stuff. But, you know, it is, you wanted to ask me, I know, at some point, how lucrative is it? And we can get into that. But it wasn't an easy space to go. So even though I had a large following, really good engagement, even now I have like 10% engagement, I have 50% New Zealand audience, I still feel a lot of girls who are in the same position as me, probably even you, like, why isn't more brands hitting you up? Why are the girls that are white with 5K, all their pictures are pretty, there's no personality, there's no values, why are they getting the opportunities? Why are they more marketable when they have no influence? They have followers, they have no influence, but you have influence. And what I had to really question is also when I went into that, I think it's a toxic industry, I'll be honest, it's a very toxic, unhealthy space to be in. I had to find the right people to be friends with, right? And I made an effort for them. I was like, I want to be friends with the activists, with the people who combat racism, with the people who, you know, in, I would say even maybe in the industry, people might think I'm dramatic or problematic because I call out stuff or raise awareness for issues. For us, it's not problematic, but for the average brand run by privileged white people, of course it's problematic because they don't have the issues that we have. They don't understand why we're so upset. And I think BLM was a huge shift where, you know, I saw a huge shift in all the white people around me. And I really became, I went from thinking the influence industry is such a toxic industry to believing this is an industry I can really work in. And this is an industry I can really teach the people around me, whether it's brands, the marketing managers, that, you know, we can work together and we can respect each other and you can make space for more of us. And so after I entered the industry, I wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to stay here and dominate and be the only person of color. For me, I started an inclusion initiative. So I called it just like the content creator inclusion initiative for PR companies, where I go in and give them feedback of anything bad I've heard about the brands. So that their event was all white, this and this made this comment, this is insensitive, whatever it was, I'd go and talk to them. And I'd also ask them, what are their issues? Why are they not more inclusive? But not why aren't they, but what's causing it? What are the setbacks for them? And I just offer free consulting anytime. And I also offer free pitching lists. So I will recommend anyone, like they'll come to me like, oh, last year there was such great brands, like I don't know, like Seed, ASB came to me like just on top of my head being like, oh, we need, you know, X and X people. And then I'd ask a bunch of questions like, do you want plus size? Do you want mums? Do you want women who are non-conventional, non-binary? Like all sorts of different questions, not just me, because I'm still slim. I've had plastic surgery for Eurocentric features. I dress nicely. I'm in Rimu era. Like that's not the representation of a person of color. We need people from different aspects of around Auckland. We need people of different ages, different income backgrounds, but all of them have the exact same thing, which is a platform and influence. And they all deserve to be in that room, not just the people who are of class and are wealthy. They're not the only people who should be there. They're actually the least influential because they're the least relatable people for the average person. The most relatable person is someone like you, or someone like Frances Cooks, who's quite like a normal woman, but she's made it. She's learned all these things and she's happy to share it with others and share her knowledge. And is it, how do you say, is it kaupapa? Am I saying it right?
A what?
Kaupapa?
Oh, kaupapa, yeah.
Kaupapa, sorry.
That's okay.
I lived in New Zealand, Australia. I was born here, but I did all my high school in Australia, America. So I'm only learning like all the words now, and I try to learn through my friends. But you know, doing that work and sharing the work. And for me, it was, I wanted every event that I go to, I obviously do have white friends. I do take them with, it's not like I pick and choose, but you know, I'll try bring in other women of color who deserve to be there. Like if you were in Auckland, I would totally take you to something, you know, like instead of just taking my friends, anytime I come across someone who's really deserving, I will take them for stuff. I will push people of color for campaigns. And, you know, I'll always mention something like, even with you, you know, I was talking to the marketing manager behind Hatch Invest, and she's like, oh, you know, we're planning out 2024, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, at the Palestine protest, I was like, oh, you really need to get that multi-millionaire chick. Like, she is just so cool and like her stuff's so good. And I was just like always making sure that you're putting the word out for other people who are talented to be out there. And honestly, being a content creator, it shouldn't be an exclusive space. But if you do get in, it is incredibly lucrative. And anyone, even someone who works full time but has a hobby of watching movies, right? Watching a movie is like $25. But if they started reviewing movies, they could get invited to premieres. And even, you know, if they got a little partnership with Disney, even if it was a couple of $100, that is money. It is money. And there's so many ways that you can monetize it. So being in the space is tricky. And of course, I have my frustrations every day. And I never forget that first experience I had. And what's so great is, you know, I went from that to like getting a paid partnership with Amen within 2 years. And they gave me over $1,000 of clothes and they sent me clothes every month. And they let me actually talk about that first story. They let me say, I said my whole theme behind the content. And that's the other big thing, that people really think influencers just have to push brands like, hey, look at this brand. Look at what I'm wearing. This is all the products. This is blah, blah, blah. For me, I try to give some sort of story behind how I feel about the brand, or, you know, something I could have never afforded. How do I have it now? And try give some sort of anecdote. So the anecdote behind that piece of content that I made with Eamon was a try on, but I talked about how, you know, as a person of color, I really struggled getting into the industry. And the first brand I reached out to was this, I didn't say the name at the time, but I'll say it now. I've already said it. And how they treated me and how it made me feel and how it put me off the industry. And, you know, you hold on to that and know that you deserve better and you will get better. But it wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to keep asking brands to work with them. I was like, okay, I need to improve my New Zealand following. I need to improve my engagement. I need to make more different content on my page, like lifestyle content between what I like to post. Post a few things about what I'm using in a day, what I like, what products I like. Share anecdotes of lifestyle, make vlogs so that I can make myself more marketable to these brands. And I was like, okay, how do I market myself? Like, luckily I have a degree in finance. I've worked in marketing. I know I need a media kit. I know I need to present my work. I need to present the brands I've worked with. These aren't things that I should have to do. I would like to just sit and take pretty pictures. And just people approach me and say, hey, come to this coach event. Hey, come to this. And all I do is take a picture and go home. I think, I've had, as a person of color, someone who's not meant to be in this industry, I've had to work much harder to prove myself and even have an entire process that when I make content that I add so much value that the brand will have to come back, like idea pitches, content plans, extra work on like a whole posting process, engaging with it, like really caring about the work. And the difference between privilege and maybe being privileged now is privilege is you don't, you know, you have it. You don't have to worry about it. For me, while I might be privileged now, I don't think I have privilege because I always worry that I will no longer have it. And it's much harder for me to get it. So I have to always work harder to prove myself when I get the job, to prove myself to be in the space, prove myself to get a job, and then also prove myself while doing the job and prove myself after the job. And there are points where, you know, I take breaks because I'm like, wow, I've proved myself so much. I'm just going to relax and enjoy a few months. But then, you know, if things get quiet, my immediate thing is, oh, you know, not more work might come. But, you know, how can I improve myself? How can I increase the revenue sources in this industry? And I think people are very, there's a misconception of what, that you just get free products and you live this luxury life. I don't know if you want me to quickly go into that of like how lucrative it is. But there's so many revenue sources if you want me to share it so that people actually know what they can make.
Yeah, definitely. I'm keen to hear about the different revenue sources you've seen or other people doing anything like that.
Yep. Keen to learn more. I get a call, so I'm going to share it and I'm going to be quite transparent. And, you know, it's all disclosed to my accountant as well. So before I was like, do you have to pay tax? I'll say what and what you have to pay tax on. So the first part is
transparency. Go for it.
Yeah. Even from anywhere from 1K onwards, you can start getting free products. If you're quite talented at making videos, there's two aspects that you can make money from. One is posting on your platform, or one is making videos for the brand. So originally, when you started off...
Can I stop? Sorry, just the question. Did you mean 1,000 followers at the start? 1,000
followers, yeah. You need no money. You don't have to have any money. And also... every brand you use in your life, from I can see the candle behind you, whatever t-shirt you're wearing, these are all brands that, you know, you can share on your page that you already own in your wardrobe. Anyone can own, and it doesn't have to be fancy stuff like Louis Vuitton. I love sharing my cheap products from the Chemist Warehouse, you know, what are my best tips, Bed Bath & Beyond, Kmart. These are all, you know, tips and products that you can share already. But, you know, once you've created a platform, whatever it is, that's a whole different avenue of becoming a creator. You just have to create content on whatever you like and find your style. Once you have about 1K, you can get free stuff either to post on your platform or to make a video for the brand. A lot of brands at that point, it can be quite exploitative. They will ask a lot from you, almost like you're working a job or contract for them, which I will not do anymore at my level. But back then, yes, I did for a phone, I did 6 in-feed posts, which is a lot of work, a lot of time. But, you know, what is your value? What is the value of the product? When you start off, you think of what is the value of the product. When you get a bit into the industry, think what is the cost price of the product and what is my cost price of hourly labor? So people will send you free products. And I was getting everything I needed, like my skincare, hair care, you know, candles. If I look at my room now, like it's gotten to a point where I've gotten like my bedding, I've got candles, lamps, like, oh my gosh, there's so much free shit in here. But like, you know, it's just like you can get everything you want. You can also give that stuff as presents. You can also give that stuff to your family and friends. So you're providing for everyone around you and it gets quite good. So there's two different types of PR that you can receive. One is like a gifted collab where they ask you, we'll send you this product. Can you post something for us? Another one is where you really want to be. And that is getting on PR lists, which is a PR company is someone who owns a range of brands. And every time the brand has some sort of promotion, they send you out some products. And when they send you, I know you know all this, but, you know, just to explain to everybody, when they send that out to you, there's technically no obligation to post at any time or do any particular thing. You can do what you want and you don't even have to post it. Anything that I say I'll accept, then I will 100% post it at some point without any obligation. Sometimes if I really love it and have a cool vlog or something, I might include it, but I have no obligation. So you start getting all the stuff that you want, and then you quickly realize, actually, I don't want a lot of this stuff. I don't need my fifth foundation. And you can reach out to brands and ask them for the things that you want. So on my list right now is my air fryer broke, and someone sent me an air fryer in the past, and I gave it away because I had an air fryer. So I'm going to go ask them, can I have an air fryer? Then I'm reorganizing my spices. I'm going to reach out to a brand and see, you know, can I work with you for spices? But what they ask you in return is your time, right? So you have to think, is it worth it for me to just go to Kmart and spend $60, or would I prefer spending several hours making a video for them? If you make quality content, if you just want to snap something up and put it up, which is a big mistake that influencers make, they start getting all these free products, they completely saturate their page with low quality content, and it reduces their engagement rate. So why would brands pay you later to make a how are you going to convert if you've got a low engagement on all your content across your page? So you need to make that choice. Do you need it? Do you not need it? Then you also get free services. So everything on me right now, free. Skincare, hair care, nails, lashes, laser for my butthole, laser for my laser for my whole body and butthole. But you can get free ass laser. Like there's the things are unlimited. Then, you know, there's entertainment, right? Then the next aspect is if you've got friends and family, you can get free travel, free accommodation, free restaurants. And then if you want to be a part of it, it's a hard space to be in. And other people talked about, I don't know how you feel about going to like influencer events, but if you can like swap out of the toxic side and just think, okay, there's food here, there's drinks, there's a great experience. There's some great people here, take a friend with you and use that chance to catch up with your friend and have some fun. And if you like the brand, of course, like, you know, share about the brand, you get to take goodie bags home. So you get to treat your friend to a goodie bag. You get a goodie bag of stuff that you might need. It's just being mindful of, like, you know, the material aspect of this industry is excessive. And I keep an Excel sheet. So I helped IID roll out the tax interpretation statement for content creators. And you have to interpret how much tax you do pay, and you do have to pay tax on gifted goods. You have to pay, my accountant has said to me that you have to pay a tax when you receive the goods, and then a separate tax of any profit that you have made from selling those goods. Usually you're not allowed to sell the goods. I might sell something like 2-3 years later, like if Huawei gives me a phone, I might sell it a few years later, or I just give it to my family. There is a lot of rules around, you can't just take the product, post it and sell it. It's very unethical. But you know, if you have 50 candles, if you do want to do a big clear out of like 5 and make $20 or something, you know, the thing is a lot of these products have very low value on the market. So you might receive a new skincare brand, but its value on the market is $0. So you actually can't really resell it, and it has no value. So when it comes to paying taxes on free stuff, you do have to pay taxes, anything over $2,000. And last year, I think I received, or the year before, not last year, I received like $30,000 or $40,000 of products, and I calculated it all, and I turned down like 70% of stuff. So you can imagine how much stuff influencers get. For services and entertainment, food and travel, you do not need to pay any tax and you can receive as much as you want. Then there's the partner. If you go past the gifted stuff, there's the partnership aspect. So you can get paid to post on your page, and how you post is part of it. You can charge for just posting video. Then you can do add-ons like stories, another platform. And then if the company wants to use that video on their page, they have to pay for that. If they want to use it for ads, they have to pay for that. And you have to be mindful how much money you should be charging. And I think as a person of color, sometimes you come in and you're like, oh, I should be so grateful. I'll just take $200. When they, if they had to pay a model and do that same campaign and advertise it, they would be getting paid like $10,000. So a big thing is you have to see yourself as you're a model, you're an actor, you're a face of the brand. Think of yourself as like, if I work for Bumble, I'm like, okay, I'm like Bella Hadid for Chanel, you know, that's how you have to see yourself. You're an asset and you deserve to be paid for your work and for your image to be used.
Really big one. And I think when I first started, I literally used to say to them, I'm like, oh, no, just a call is fine. And then they would literally like send me like $50. And I was like, okay, I'm not doing that again. So I learned my lesson pretty quickly from being able to learn how to like value myself. And I think that's definitely a relatable thing where I was like, I thought they were doing me a favor. Like I thought that by them coming to me and them offering me mahi, that they were doing me a favor. They were trying to help me grow my business and blah, blah, blah. But the reality was, even at the start of my business, when I didn't have that many followers, like they were still getting the majority of the benefits out of me promoting their product. Like I got not much money from it. And they got a lot of exposure to a new demographic of people. And I think that's the thing that I've started to realize. Like, I don't even think about it for myself anymore. I think when I'm working with brands, I'm providing them access to my community of Māori who are learning how to become better with money. And I think that that in itself is a privilege that I'm able to, I don't know, be the founder of this community or whatever. And there's this like obligation for me to actually know that when I'm working with brands, I'm exposing my audience to these brands, and I need to be careful about who I allow into this kind of circle. And then also, if I'm going to do this, then I need to be remunerated for that. Like, I'm not a volunteer. And that's the biggest thing that I had to keep on telling myself last year, because I was in this bad habit of saying yes to everything. And even if they didn't have money, I'd feel sorry for them. Oh, that's so sad. You know, they would say, oh, you know, we just really want to put on this event and we have no money. And I'd feel sorry for them. And I'd go, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And so I had to keep on telling myself, I'm not a volunteer.
And that's the thing. It's just like how you get paid as well. It's like you have an audience and you have a profile. There's two. It's not just about your followers. It's about the audience you have. Do you have the typical white audience for fashion, or do you have a really niche audience? Me and you have quite niche audiences. I have a lot of women of color and a lot of women who are interested in social activism. You have an amazing niche audience that many people in this country want to access. So you get paid for that, and you get paid for your profile. You've been featured in the media, other podcasts. You're becoming very well known. You're well known in the community. So you're technically comes under public figure or celebrity. So you get paid for that aspect as well. Then you get paid for your time. So how much you can get paid, like people always ask this, is if you're a couple of thousand followers, I think you can charge a couple of hundred per post. If you have the skill of camera editing and phone camera editing, you can make it 500. I charge about, for a UGC video, of just making a video for a brand, $400 plus, you know, usage rights on top. If it's in feed for my Instagram, it's 1,000. If it's TikTok, 1,200. I have packages that a lot of brands buy. So I'll try upsell them. I'll be like, TikTok, Instagram, discount, plus a story set, plus, you know, I've got a really great content creation process. You can have all the extra ideas I don't use. And I'll give you feedback at the end of the campaign how you can improve your page, right? Because I also bring in my marketing. So, you know, there's been months where I've made like $17,000 when it was really good. That was a like 1 month ever, but I'm always so proud of that month. And then, you know, there's been months that I made nothing. And, you know, on an average month, it might be a couple of thousand to 7,000-8,000. You never know. Like, and also how you get paid is very different. You do the campaign now, you might get paid straight away or in 6 weeks. So, you know, on average, how much you're booking at someone with me, 30,000 followers and 40,000 on TikTok, 30,000 on IG, 40,000 TikTok, there's good money. Then you can also make money from event appearances, speaking, writing like a column for a magazine, or even just giving an op-ed or an opinion to a magazine for a brand, not for the direct media. And then like if you have a course or something, like I have three things I do. I have my consulting business. I used to do marketing execution, like, you know, doing the whole campaign. I don't do that anymore. I mainly just consult and give strategy plans. So I can market that. I can also market my work. Like if any brand or anybody wants a video made, that's a service I'm providing. And then I also have a secondhand selling page. And if it's quiet, I'll just boost it through my main platform. I mainly just sell my own stuff, but I do flip a bit of furniture, but it's big pieces. So not everyone wants like couches and stuff. I usually list it on marketplace, but I've had many sales through the page. Like even once a month, someone will buy a couch, right? So it's just like, there's so many ways you can monetize the page. And then even if you don't want to have a partnership sort of thing, you've got UGC where you make videos for the brands. And all you really need is a little bit of skill on editing on a free app. Like there's CapCut on your phone. You can do a free version. And then you just need, everyone has a, you know, some sort of camera. You just need a good camera and just know how to shoot. And that's all free on YouTube. So the level of monetization there is insane. And I look at all, like I've monetized free stuff, free services, entertainment, food, travel, all free. Partnerships, money, UGC money, Getting free marketing from my platform to my other businesses and getting sales and customers. And then occasionally, not as often, event appearances, speaking, and writing. And then who knows, one day it could be even bigger. Books, shows, TV shows. That's the same for you, you know? Like if we keep working on it, that's where we could potentially hit, maybe, I hope. But, you know, the opportunities are unlimited. And even if you work a full-time job, even getting that free stuff, if you did not have to pay for all your beauty and skincare, makeup, food, all that stuff, that's a lot of money right there. You could save 10 to 20 grand, you know, every few years, really, or for a family, even more. If you have kids, you can get all your free nappies and shit. So like, yeah, it's a good place to be, but you have to accept all the vices that comes with being in the industry and being in the public eye.
Yeah, it's definitely not an easy thing. And I think it's a very glamorized kind of career path for a lot of people. They're like, oh, you know, influencers get to do blah, blah, blah. But it's like, yeah, we also have to, and I don't even think, I don't know, I'm of this like different thing that I don't want to be seen as like, I call myself a content creator because I think that like, that's what I do. But I think that influence is really about, people will only listen if they genuinely agree or if, you know, there is a potential for people to be swayed by what I say. And I think recently I've been delving a lot into like talking about afterpay and lay-by and all these other things. And I have people commenting like, you know, but I budget for my afterpay payments and all of these things. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you haven't been influencer. Like you are fully in your own behaviors and you agree with what you're doing. And, you know, whatever I say isn't going to change that. But I think there is a big cost to all of this and being able to make so much money on social media and being able to do all of this stuff. But yeah, it does come at a cost, as you said.
I think cost is it though. If you stay away from like the drugs, the sex, the alcohol, the bad habits, the bad people, the gossip, the toxicity of it, and you endure. And I've really had to go from like blasting brands for being that I think being racist to going and having private, nice conversations and gritting my teeth, asking them to do better. You know, there is a big transition. And obviously I have to be in a room full of people I really love and people I feel or only there because they're privileged, but you have to accept that. The huge acceptance is a huge weight on your mental health, but I do think it's a good space to be in. And I think that a lot of the limitations of why people don't enter is because they think it's for privileged society, status, class, but it's not. It's about having a community and you get to provide really well for the people around you and you get to share brands from a different light. You know, do you want to see a brand on a skinny, you know, 6 foot blonde model, or do you want to see the brand on an everyday woman talking about how they use the brand? That's the change of how things are being delivered. It is still capitalism, it's still materialism, but it's coming from a different, more relatable perspective. So I think I just have to accept this is a shit industry. I'm not proud to say I'm an influencer. I do love being a content creator. You know, it's a very well-panned industry, and well, people are waiting to criticize you if you do something wrong. And I've experienced that myself. Another big thing is I do not think it's, unless you have a million followers or something, I do not think it's your only sustainable income source. I would recommend, like I do, I have a business on the side. I have a side hustle, few different income sources, because it is very risky. It just could be a bad time of the year and you lose brand deals just because of that. Two, you can have something like me, like a bad piece of press, even whether it's true or not, or whether it's if I just seemed really shit in the article, then, you know, there's a potential that you could lose stuff from there. Then also, if you say something wrong, if it's misinterpreted, you have a slip up, you do something wrong, which every person does. But when you're held up here, you're meant to be at a better standard of behavior. And even I've, you know, behaved badly sometimes. So, you know, there's all these things that can impact it. So there is a huge weight on your shoulders to maintain your brand. You have to choose and really choose and pick your battles and what you share, and who you, yeah, call out and confront, and, you know, who you criticize. And when, you know, while I might say I've found people to be quite privileged and it's a white dominated industry, everyone who gives me opportunities now are white and do acknowledge their privilege. But if I didn't go around saying, hey, you have privilege, you're white, and just be like, oh, please give me an opportunity, I'm so grateful, I would have never broken out and become the person I am in the industry where I can have a say negotiate my pay, know my worth, say no, put down boundaries. You can't just be in that space of gratitude and, you know, accepting what you get. You have to, again, like I said, you build your own system in the space. And if people don't agree to that system, they can fuck off, you know, like it's just how it is. Like, not fuck off, but, you know, like, we don't have to work that sort of thing.
Yeah. You can stay in your lane and I'll come stay over here. That was my biggest learning of 2023, was actually realizing that, yep, there's people that aren't going to be on the same page as you. And what I initially would do was I would just kind of like, things aren't working out for us at the moment. I don't think this is going to work. But what I've realized is like, actually, we can have a conversation about this. And I can actually go, hey, I didn't appreciate how you did X, Y, and Z. Talking about brands, you know, and I think it's quite a scary thing to do. Like, I'm literally just a 20-year-old girl, like, don't know what I'm doing with my life. And going, but like going to these brands and you're like, hey, like I didn't appreciate how you did this. And I think, you know, this could have been taken as like racism, to be honest. And I think having the courage to be able to have those conversations actually contributes to brands being able to be better. And when they're held accountable, they can actually grow and change. And what I've seen so far is that not all of them, but a lot of them are actually quite receptive to that. On that note,
really how you do it. If you come from a place of love and you say, hey, this hurt my feelings, it came across like this, could you do better, versus, you know, kind of like, you're wrong, you shouldn't have done this, you're racist, you know, always quite important. You can say it came across as racist. Was it their intention? If it was their intention, then yeah, say shit. But a lot of times it's not intentional, it's just how they've been brought up. It's just what, you know, a lot of offices, maybe they have one or two people of color. The brand is owned by someone of you know, I have to just say privilege, and the people that work for them also have privilege, and it's not their fault, it's who they are, but like trying to coexist with them. And you know, there's sometimes that I just, you know, you say it nicely, there's sometimes I say, I'm like, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong country. If you caught me in Sri Lanka, maybe I'd work for you as a sweatshop influencer. Or I'll say, like, go back to the 1800s where I could be your slave. Like, I do say stuff like that, but man, it has to be a really bad offer. And then they get so taken up by that they have to really rethink, are we asking? Like, sweatshop level work, and like, I giving me a product, and I almost like I'm indentured to you to do all this stuff on a timeline when it doesn't pay my bills, and you chase me up like I'm an employee. Like, you are in the wrong century, or you're in the wrong country for either of those things. So it's really great that we're in New Zealand, and as people of color, we have our liberties to still be paid in any industry fairly, or at least demand it. It's illegal not to pay you fairly, but that's the issue with this industry, is there's, because you're a contractor, your hourly rate, you can sometimes get paid less than minimum wage, almost like under the table style wages. If someone says $200, but they ask you for X and X and all these photos and UGC and your rights to the video, it is exploitation. So it's making sure you're in the space and you don't get exploited. And I think it's up to us, me and you, people who understand our worth, know what we should be getting paid, know our, you know, what value we bring, to really hold a standard of what we should get paid. But, you know, if we're broke, we'll let it slide, you know. When I'm poor, I'll take whatever, just give me whatever. But I refuse.
I love that. What goals do you have for 2024 before we kind of rip things up? I think we've been going for people still be here, because everyone always tells me they want short, snappy episodes, but I like making long episodes. So I'm gonna let you answer our last.
I'll answer it really quickly. My goal is to like grow every aspect, like grow my, you know, my monetization of my platforms, like improving my UGC offerings for partnerships, all that sort of stuff, improving Bougie on a Budget, making a website, like improving my profile as a model, like just doing all the work behind building those profiles for every income source that I have, taking a few holidays with my family, having the money for that, like justifying taking holidays, taking time off. So those are my goals. Just build, build, build. This is a year of building, not surviving for me. So that's quite nice.
Awesome. I really love that. And it's so awesome for you. If anyone wants to have a look at your profile or go follow you and look at Bougie on a Budget or anything else you post, how can someone find you?
So they can find me on Sabby J, just SabbyJeyXX on TikTok and Instagram.
Cool, which we'll have in the show notes as well. So Yeah, I guess thank you so much for spending your time this morning or this afternoon with me. I've learned so much. You're awesome and really, really happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can stop recording.
Yes.